Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet, presented by OTGBasketball.com. Make sure you follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I am your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron, and our guest today, Jack Manuel. What is up, guys?
Thanksgiving's over. Christmas is coming. But in between, lots of basketball to happen.
Yeah, I'm feeling like I'm on the injured reserve from eating too much. My dad actually suffered probably a torn ACL working on Saturday. So the injuries have been real.
Well, we're wishing your dad a strong recovery and a ton of NBA news regarding injuries. So this is going to kind of be a sour pod. But let's start with the breaking news we got on Friday, and that was Derrick Rose. Woj broke another bomb that Derrick Rose is weighing his basketball future. A source from inside, you know, with inside information about Derrick Rose, he's tired of being hurt. It's taking a toll on him mentally. What are your thoughts on this when you saw this news about Derrick Rose?
Sad. Somewhat surprised, but not too that surprised. The timing shocked me. It sucks to see guys' bodies fail them when they have so much talent and potential. Derrick Rose changed the league that 2011-2012 season. A lot of people said he shouldn't have been MVP, but you can't deny the talent of the guy. And he was the face of Chicago, the story behind him growing up in the South Side. It just sucks to see guys ripped of their livelihood by their bodies. And this entire pod's going to be talking about it. But Derrick Rose, it's certainly an interesting story in how it plays out in terms of, you know, contracts with shoe deals and contracts with the Cavs. It's a fascinating story, if not a sad one.
What's that song? Hello, Darkness, My Old Friend.
Oh, Gears of War trailer.
Yeah, yeah. Or whatever it's from, yeah. That's how I pictured Derrick Rose, like just sitting in a room, like, hello, darkness, my old friend. It sucks. I definitely feel for him. I can only imagine what a year in and year out, you know, constantly having your legs, you know, between the knee, the ankle, something going wrong every year. You keep thinking this is the year for you. You keep thinking that you're going to get that max contract that you once could have when you were that MVP that you mentioned, Jack. And it's just, you know, year in and year out, something breaks down. I'm sure the path to getting back on the court gets harder and harder. The mental strain that this man is enduring from having his body giving out on him is probably none that I can ever fathom, at least to this point in my life. It's sad. I do think that if he gets back on the court, it won't be perfect, but I do think he has a place on this Cavaliers team. It depends on how his mental battle goes from this point on.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point you make about the mental battle with Corey, because, you know, we've all us people who can't fathom the injuries he's had, you know, I've had like a concussion and some bad ankle injuries and stuff, and you feel useless not being able to conduct yourself in the way you want to. For an athlete where their job is to be athletic, to be a basketball and to like show out on the court, and you literally can't do anything, let alone, you know, do everyday things. I think that's probably playing a huge part on him as well. Cause I remember chatting to my brother back home. He's a huge Derrick Rose fan. I remember, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago after the second knee injury, he was like, he got criticized heavily for saying, look, I want to have a post career where I can say I can go to my kids' colleges and I can walk. I think that's probably weighing on him right now because, you know, he's got kids and he's got a family. So as much as he's made money over his career and we can all say that, like, you know, who cares, blah, 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 woe is me. The fact that, you know, he's gone through so much physically and mentally, it's got to be a strain on him.
Yeah, I mean, going from being an MVP caliber player to being maybe an above average bench player in the NBA is a tough challenge. And then the fact to deal with all these injuries, like you mentioned, Jack, life after basketball. And then you kind of get to the point is like, you know, one of these times when I get injured, I'm not going to be able to recover. And that's probably something that he's thinking about. Where do we think this impacts the Cavs? You know, and I'm not saying this in a mean way. Does it matter if Derrick Rose comes back for the Cavs or they'll be fine without him regardless?
For the short term, I think it doesn't really matter, Nick. You know, they've been on a 7-game winning streak, playing some nice basketball. You know, it helps the fact that, you know, it doesn't clog up D-Wade because they're similar players in the fact that they can't really shoot from the perimeter. But going deep into the season, you'd rather have those extra bodies in case injuries happen in April, May, and June. And, you know, Derrick Rose may suffer another one, whether it's a niggling ankle injury, which have been plaguing him lately. But I think in terms of the Cavs' depth, it will help for him to be back. But right now, they're playing decent enough basketball without him.
Yeah, Jose Calderon's on this roster still. I will never say Derrick Rose doesn't deserve a roster spot when Jose Calderon is on the roster. So with that being said, I definitely think Derrick Rose has a spot on this roster. I don't think starting him is ideal going forward, even if he comes back. I think you've got to put him on the bench. Egos aside, Derrick Rose is probably best used for this team in a 15 to 25 minute top burst. I do think Wade and Rose at times can be problematic because they're both, you know, ball handlers. They both can't shoot. But Rose's ability to get to the hoop, even early on this year, I know he hasn't been good defensively, but offensively, he can still get to the basket. He's still quick. He still has enough elusiveness to get, you know, the tough layups to fall. You know, for 20 minutes a night, you can't turn away a guy who can get you, you know, 15 points in 20 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that they wouldn't mind him being around, but I don't think in theory that they really need him. Like you guys have pointed to, him and Dwayne Wade having similar skill sets, and Wade kind of taking control of that second unit now. I think it's not as important if he were to come back. Obviously, if Isaiah Thomas comes back, that's the most important thing. But if he didn't, then they would need Rose. But in a situation Isaiah Thomas is back healthy, I think they'd be okay without him. But we do wish Rose the best, and we hope that he's back soon. But talking about point guards in the Eastern Conference, we got news this weekend. John Wall will be out 2 weeks. He had some therapy, some, you know, enrichment to his knee, some plasma in there, and some other things. So he's going to be out 2 weeks. What were your thoughts when you heard about this? You know, John Wall's a big name in the NBA to go out for 2 weeks.
Yeah, worrying news for me, Nick, because just seeing like a few tweets from some of the beat writers and stuff, the same thing happened to Reggie Jackson. He needed that PRP platelet-rich plasma injections to sort of get his knee right, get that swelling down. And apparently it can be, you know, a process that's fraught with danger. You know, there can be inflammation. There can be, you know, I don't think 2 weeks, you know, we're going to see John Wall at 100%. You know, Reggie Jackson last year was more than subpar. And the timing of it as well, the fact that it happened, the injury itself occurred November 7 when he banged knees against the Mavs player. You know, he's been playing for 2 weeks or so, maybe a little bit longer, with that lingering injury. That can't have helped either. So anything where you're making injections, there's always a certain amount of risk involved. And, you know, his stats haven't been outstanding. They've still been very, very good. But the thing is, I think the schedule for the Wizards gets a bit tricky coming up. You know, they face the Wolves, the 76ers, and the Pistons, three pretty good teams. And by the time that John Wall comes back, they might have had a couple of losses. So they're hoping to maybe Marcus Morris will have to step up a bit more.
Yeah, it's the Wizards are one of those teams where, like, if they lose John Wall in particular, the entire season is, you know, up for question. So, I mean, I get it's only 2 weeks. And we'll have to see how he bounces back. He had that shoulder injury earlier in the year as well. So it's been a, you know, John Wall's numbers are slightly down or whatever, but he's been banged up for the majority of this season to a degree. And that seems to be an issue with the Wizards in general for the years past. You know, Bradley Beal missed a lot of time his first several years. Wall has missed some time. Markieff Morris has had his troubles as well with injuries. You know, Otto Porter Jr. seems to be the only guy who's been consistent. He had a phenomenal game last night for them. Bradley Beal was solid. You're really just going to need guys like Otto Porter Jr. to really, you know, he got that max contract this offseason. So now this is probably the best time for him to prove that he deserved it with John Wall missing time, because Otto Porter Jr. kind of, you know, he falls between the cracks on that team because obviously Wall and Beal are the face, but Porter Jr. is a big part of that.
Do you think Beal is going to be the number one guy that needs to step up, or is it somebody else on the roster, or Beal's the guy?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of Beal and Porter, as Corey mentioned. Porter with that max contract, he's going to have to repay the faith, certainly, and he has been. He's been playing some great basketball this season. It's just funny to see the fact that Bradley Beal is actually healthy, which is a really good sign for the Wizards. But hopefully, like we touched on wood earlier, the fact that he can maintain himself, because if they lose him, the Wizards' death isn't one of their strong suits, that's for sure. But I think, yeah, Bill has had some, you know, up and down nights in the absence of Wall, because they just feed off each other so well. They have such a great partnership, a la the team they lost to last night, CJ and Dame. I think it's going to be up to a team effort, Nick. But, you know, when you're looking at the next man up, so to speak, it's certainly Beal and then Porter, and then you go to Morris, and even Oubre will have to step up as well.
Yeah, I'm on the same page. I think Bradley Beal obviously has to be the main guy to step up, being the second best player on the team, clearly. But, you know, you can't say that guys like Gortat, who hasn't been very good this year, Morris, who's still kind of coming back from that injury, and guys like Otto Porter Jr., you know, they really need to step up. It's got to be a team effort. Luckily for them, they have Tim Frazier, and I actually really like Tim Frazier. He had a nice stint last year with the Pelicans, and I think he's a good enough playmaker where they can actually still get the type of playmaker from John Wall from Frazier. They just won't get as much offense.
Yeah, that Frazier pickup in the offseason, I think we talked about on the pod, second-round pick was definitely worth it. But like Corey hinted at before, you know, losing Wall for an extended period of time could be an issue. The Wizards haven't been great this season, only 10-9. If the playoffs start today, they'd be the 8th seed. So where do you think this, you know, puts the Wizards in terms of the standings? Is this going to dig them a deep hole where they're not going to be able to get in the top four of the East?
I don't think so, Nick. I think it fluctuates so often. Like, we were talking about the Cavs in previous outlet pods about the fact that they weren't even in the top eight. But, you know, if we are to believe that John Wall is back within 2 weeks, he misses 6 or 7 games. You know, let's make it 7 to 10 games. You know, 7 to 10 games, if they can stay at 500 for that period of time, you get John Wall back, and I think you maintain some consistency. The fact that it's happening, you know, at this time of the season in November, December, rather than, you know, March, April, May, when it, you know, the things start to really heat up. We mentioned that injuries aren't really great to happen at any point in time, but you'd rather it be a small injury happening right now than happening near the playoffs.
Yeah, I think this is fine because, you know, he'll be back at the very latest, I'm guessing, by, you know, Christmas. So they'll get John Wall back after a couple of weeks. Even if they go on like a, I don't know, let's say they lose, you know, 4 of their next 5 or 4 of their next 6 or something that's not good. I don't think this will be anything that puts them too far out of that top four race, especially once you start catching that, you know, after the All-Star break runs to get into the playoffs.
Talking about another injury around the league, we also had news this previous week. Paul Millsap, big free agent signing for the Denver Nuggets, tears a ligament in his left wrist. He'll be out multiple months. Looked like the Nuggets were really starting to pick it up a little bit. What are your thoughts on this? How's this going to impact Denver in the stacked Western Conference?
Look, it hurts them, Nick, but I think they are stacked at that power forward position. Kenneth Faried has played pretty well, sort of fits well with their offense. I think integrating Millsap early in the season was part of the challenge. You know, they weren't horrible by any means, but last year the Nuggets were famed for their defense. I think top 3, top 2 maybe even. Right now they're 6th, which is obviously they're getting back into their ways. 18th on defense. I think that's where it really makes an impact on the defensive end. Paul Millsap has, you know, consistently been probably a top 10, top 15 defender in this league, always near the all NBA defense teams. I think that's where it probably hurts them a little bit more. But as well, Millsap is quite a good creator, so he's quite a good passer, similar to sort of the Al Horford vein, obviously being former teammates. But I think the defense will take a bit of a hit, but the offense might be able to make up for it because the flow that they're going to be able to create, because obviously Millsap's aging, with someone like an energy guy like a Fareed, may help them. But, you know, it's about that balance.
Oh, it's disappointing. Paul Millsap getting hurt is really disappointing because, like you both, you know, just mentioned, the Nuggets were kind of catching their stride. They were playing better basketball. The one thing, you know, you mentioned Fareed. This gives the Nuggets and Fareed a chance to kind of raise his stock, to possibly dish him off. Because Millsap's only out for, what, a month to 2 months?
2 to 3 months.
Yeah,
right,
2 to 3.
So, you know, best case scenario, Fareed makes himself look valuable. Millsap comes back and you trade away Fareed, which is what they've been trying to do for, you know, the last couple of years. It feels like they've been trying to move Fareed and possibly like a Wilson Chandler. And this might be, for the Nuggets at least, the best chance to kind of move those players. Because, like we mentioned, Fareed's a great high-energy guy. He'll bring something a little bit different than Millsap does, but it's definitely a chance for the Nuggets, who are in a pretty bad situation losing Millsap after that big contract, to at least get some kind of like silver lining out of it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, like you said, they've been trying to trade for Reed for years, and it gives him an opportunity to showcase some skills a little bit. If he plays really well, you might be able to convince somebody to take him on. But what are your guys' thoughts on Paul Millsap being 32 and having this type of injury? A ligament tear is no joke. Do you think this is going to impact him long term?
It's hard to say, Nick, because, you know, the fact that, you know, we talk a lot of this pod's been centered on injuries, and it's
sadly, it's like a sad vibe.
It is, right, it is, unfortunately, but, you know, it's Sunday vibes going into the working week, I guess. But no, Paul Millsap, I think in terms of his professionalism, I'm sure he's had setbacks along the way. Nothing, in terms of my NBA fandom, nothing to the extent of this, obviously, but, you know, it's not like a horrible knee injury or a horrible shoulder injury. It's something that he can certainly come back from. And I think Denver has a good system there for him as well. I think he got that contract, so he has at least got that stability that he got prior to the season. So he doesn't have to worry about, you know, balling out and finding a new contract in free agency. He's at least got that stability there with the Nuggets. He knows that he's wanted. He knows he's a part of their hopeful playoff run. As long as he's back, you know, a month or two before the playoffs where he can get some reps in, I don't see it being too serious. But, you know, we said that about John Wall as well. So, you know, I'd love to have a crystal ball. I'd love to be a psychic. But, you know, I'm always a glass half full kind of guy.
Yeah, so I want you to give me more, Jack. I want you to know for sure. I want a definitive answer. No, I'm just...
I wish I could. I wish I could, Corey. But you're the one, mate. You're the hot takes guy. I'm the. Like to think of myself as slightly measured, but
lukewarm water. Is that what you're trying to say?
A little bit. I don't like things too hot. You know, I like to think a bit tepid. You know, Nick and I get a bit crazy on the Brooklyn buzz, but you know, when it comes to my Nets, it's a bit different. But yeah, with Millsap, I'm just hoping he can be back. I don't want to. Because, you know, I just want the best for all these players, whether it's Rose, whether it's Wall, whether it's Millsap. I think they all, you know, got the chance to come back. It's just, I think Millsap probably has the best situation to come back to, the most stable situation to come back to.
Yeah, I agree. Millsap definitely has a good situation. And the one great thing about injuries nowadays, especially because Millsap, and I don't think he's ever had a serious injury prior to this one, which he's not a good thing because he's, what, 31, 32? Getting injuries this late in your career is never a good sign or a good start. But modern day, you know, health science and all that, it's pretty damn good. So even though this is a rather serious injury, if it's done correctly, if he rehabs correctly, you know, the NBA obviously has some of the best training staffs in the league, like across sports. You know, I don't expect him to miss too much off of his game. But for me, I think it definitely will hinder him at first because you're going to have to try and get Rick's wrist strength back as well to a degree. And I think that'll be the one obstacle for him to face.
Yeah, the one positive too is he's a right-handed shooter. So if he was a lefty, it would definitely be a big issue because it's a left tendon, a left ligament tear. But overall, how do you think this impacts the Nuggets? Does this scare you in their terms of making the playoffs, or is it, you know, you're still pretty comfortable with them getting in?
I like them just because, you know, we look at what's happening with the teams like the Jazz and the Clippers also suffering injuries. And the Nuggets have been able to solidify themselves a little bit more. The one thing that does worry me just doing a quick Google search is the fact that the rehabilitation process and the direction that the training staff want to take with Millsap hasn't been set in stone yet. So in terms of like surgery and or no surgery in that sense, they haven't decided on it yet. So that's one thing that sort of worries me a little bit. Whereas at least with Wall, like, you know, they're clear in what they want to do with the PRP injections. So hopefully they can decide on that route sooner rather than later, because I'm sure it'd be frustrating for Coach Malone and Paul for himself. But yeah, I'm confident about the Nuggets. I was confident about them early in the season. Jokic has been back to his hot form, and even the guards Murray and Harris have been playing a little bit better too.
When it comes to Denver in the playoffs, I don't know if I even had them as a lock to make the playoffs before the season started. Losing Millsap for 2 to possibly 3 months, to me, especially in that Western Conference, it definitely does hinder them. I don't think it's as set of them making the playoffs as it possibly was like 2 weeks ago, even a week ago. I wouldn't be surprised if they miss out on the playoff dance.
Well, right now they're at 11-8, same as the Timberwolves, one game behind the Blazers, a game in front of the Pelicans. The Jazz are at 9-11, so they've got a nice little buffer there for now. It's whether they can, I think it's going to probably take, as we mentioned, preseason, the fact that the West is so stacked now, it's probably going to take probably 43 games to sneak in. They've got their 3 games ahead of 500. If they can stay one or two above it throughout the Millsap's loss, throughout the time that he's out, then that will certainly help, because it's going to take some time to probably reintegrate him into the system too. But I think things are working well for them now, so hopefully that bodes well.
Yeah, I think they were a comfortable playoff pick early in the season, preseason wise. I think right now I would probably have them competing for a playoff spot. I don't know if I'd be willing to lock them in. Going to the season, I had them as, one of the middle seeds. But I think right now, looking at them, the Millsap injury, depending on when he comes back, obviously we say 2 to 3 months, but then, there's rehab, getting back into game shape, making sure everything works out right. So I think they probably have to actually fight for that playoff spot instead of kind of sliding in like they would have preseason if everybody stayed healthy.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Talking more negative news, let's talk OKC. They're 8-11 this season, lost 4 of their last 5, fresh off a blowout loss to Dallas. What is wrong with the Oklahoma City Thunder?
Their offense. Their defense is actually pretty damn good. Like, they're one of they're second in defensive rating in the NBA right now, but they're 21st in offensive rating, 25th in field goal percentage and 3-point percentage. Their clutch time stats are deplorable. Equal last in wins in that time with the Mavs. 29th in true shooting percentage in that time, 23rd in offensive rating, last in defensive rating. So while their defense is good in normal time, they allow a horrific 138.7 points per 100 possessions. I think the depth doesn't help that. Their flow in general, Paul George was quite poor last night. The isolation play, it's all offense, but then it's also clutch time. I think it's a combination of both, and they're going to figure things out because there's some things that are going quite well, but they've got to figure it out quickly because, they're sinking right now.
It's scary right now if you're a Thunder brass or ownership, because there's a lot on the line for your season. Obviously, you re-signed Westbrook, but there isn't a sure thing that Paul George re-signs, and then who knows if Melo will opt in or opt out. The big three has been probably one of the only bright sides to the Thunder. Westbrook hasn't been as aggressive to start off the season. He's been kind of trying to get Melo and Paul George comfortable. I think Paul George has fit in relatively well. I think he's been perfect for them. He plays off ball really well. He's had a couple of big scoring nights. Melo's been solid. But it's everything after those three guys, which is the issue. Like you mentioned, Jack, they are one of the best defensive teams. I think they're top three in defensive rating. But offensively, besides those three stars, your fourth best option is a toss-up between Steven Adams and Raymond Felton. And I don't know how good that's going to be in this age of basketball and at this time period where Felton has the dad bod of the century. And then I think every time I think of Felton or say Felton, I have to bring up his dad bod. It's just like it's an automatic thing.
Pardon possum. Yeah.
Yeah. Then you got Jeremy Grant. Patrick Patterson has been god-awful. What happened to him? I was ranting and raving about that signing, and this guy is shooting like 27% from the field.
I think the key thing with that, Corey, as you mentioned, I was going to mention his name as well. He had that knee arthroscopy back in August, and I think he still doesn't look comfortable at all. He hasn't found his niche. He hasn't found his role. Whether that's a coaching thing to do with Donovan, the fact that he's so heavily focused on integrating those big three. But yeah, Patrick Patterson's been poor. I've liked Jeremy Grant. I've liked him. He's been, you know, one of the better players, you know, probably, you know, fourth or fifth, as Corey was sort of saying. But yeah, Patterson has been trash. And, you know, we raved about him on the preview pods, but, you know, he's certainly letting us down.
Do you guys think that the struggles of, you know, the rest of the team is due to, you know, the big three playing iso ball, the coach's system, or the role players just playing bad?
I think it's a little bit of all of it, but like, I think the iso ball doesn't help in terms of, you know, making the other players feel a part of the offense. They take, you know, 20 pull-up twos a game in when it comes to isolation possessions. So, you know, that's Melo, that's Paul George, that's Russ. You know, Melo's not a famed passer. Paul George is a decent passer. Russ loves to get his triple-doubles. He seems to be stat-chasing a little bit lately, which is not really positive. But a few nights ago, this team did beat the Golden State Warriors as well. So I think there's a glass half full approach you could look. You know, they just lost to the Pistons. I think I can't remember who it was, but you know, in terms of the amount of 5 point or less losses that they've had, you flip that around, they could be in the top four, top five right now in the West. But that's where they've struggled because of their clutch time offense, because of their clutch time defense. They're just going back to, you know, complete boring old ISO, which is predictable and easy to defend. So I think it needs to work out quickly because, you know, who knows, as Corey and you, Nick, mentioned, the fact they're on a timeline here, that they need to get it worked out. And does Billy Donovan get sacked? Do they replace him? Does Paul George maybe get traded if things aren't working to the Cavs for that Nets pick? Because Sam Presti is known for being a very savvy GM. So if things aren't working, he may blow it up because he knows he's got Russ there. But at the same time, this team did beat the Golden State Warriors. Like, not that the Warriors have been in fantastic form, but I think OKC have the tools there. It's just that, you know, they're not building it right. It's that they're missing a piece or two.
Yeah, there's definitely – this puzzle is not complete, if that makes sense. There's still a lot of things they need to address, and I'm not sure they're going to be able to address it by free agency, which then, like I mentioned when I was first making my point, that there's going to be decisions to be made about Paul George and Melo at the deadline, I think. Maybe not Melo in particular, but Paul George. You know, if this doesn't get right, do you even keep Paul George for the full season, or do you try and trade him? Like, that's a question I have. Why not, if you know he's going to go to L.A. and you're struggling, why not trade Paul George to the Lakers for Julius Randle and KCP? Or just do something so you don't leave empty-handed.
What do you think is the point at the season? You both brought up trading Paul George where OKC, you know, our record right now, you know, we're maybe the eighth seed. It's not looking too good. At what point in the year are you like, all right, maybe moving Paul George is in our best interest?
It's definitely the all-star break. It's definitely that trade deadline, January, February. If things aren't on the rise, then if things aren't, you know, they've got to, you know, give them a month or so. I think, you know, we're probably about a month and a half into the NBA season now. They're still finding their way. So if it takes another month, month and a half, then they're certainly going to be struggling and they're certainly going to have to make some moves. There's certainly probably going to be some vet minimum guys that will make their way down there. Sam Presti, as I mentioned, is one of the top GMs in the league with Danny Ainge and Daryl Morey. But even he's going to have a tough time in terms of the Paul George dilemma. That's for sure.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you, Jack. I think the trade deadline is probably right on point with when a decision will have to be made. Like you mentioned with Sam Presti, the guy has been phenomenal, obviously bringing together Paul George, Melo, and Westbrook. Was something that I don't think any of us really thought was going to happen to start off this offseason. I think that was kind of one of those things that came out of left field, which is what is beautiful about the NBA in general, is teams like the Thunder can get two preliminary all-stars on their team. I do agree, Jack, about veterans, especially, you know, when they come back from China later on in the season and when there's guys being cut or whatnot, that this team will try to make the best of whatever scraps they can find. I don't know if it's going to be enough. I'm not completely worried about the Thunder yet, because I do think star power eventually will be enough to drive this team to wins. I just think, you know, they're having trouble in the worst time of a game, which is winning time, you know, clutch time. The last, you know, 5 minutes of a ball game, it's the same old Thunder. You know, it's not Westbrook and Durant trying to figure out who wins now. It's these three guys trying to figure it out, and they just haven't gotten it down yet.
Yeah, they just haven't. I mean, the chemistry just hasn't looked right. It's a lot of like, you know, where should I go? Should I pass it to him now? Things just seem really out of sync. If you guys had to make a guess here, is it more likely the Thunder end up with a top four seed or a bottom four seed in terms of playoff seeding?
I'll probably go bottom four. I think they'll probably make fifth. You know, you go Warriors, Rockets, Spurs. Right now, probably the Timberwolves have their defensive woes, but they're playing okay. I think that, you know, even Denver, if they start to click offensively, it's odd because they've got the talent there. And I think that's when they will peak in the playoffs, because that's when things slow down. That's when star power comes to the fore. You know, your bench rotation becomes tighter. And I think that's where OKC will shine. It's just about whether they can get themselves, as you mentioned, Nick, if they can get themselves a top four seed, get some home court advantage, that's going to help them. But right now, they're not even at 500. So they've got a ways to go, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think they'll be a bottom four seed. You know, the teams in front of them are like the Lakers, Jazz, Pelicans, and the Nuggets. And I don't know if I see – I mean, obviously the Lakers aren't going to be up there. I don't think all season. The Jazz, especially with Rudy Gobert being down for another 2 weeks, he'll probably – you know, they might slip a little bit in the standings. I definitely see OKC finishing around a six or a five seed once they catch momentum.
Yeah, I think they'll be able to find some momentum. And I think what Jack said, you know, playoff time is the best time for this team when things really start to slow down. And they play great defense, so that's something that'll benefit them too. It's just kind of about getting their offense going, and that's where they have a ton of talent. Soon as Billy Donovan or Westbrook figures out, you know, how can we get this thing rolling offensively, I think, you know, OKC can still really find a way to click this year. We have another game this week for you guys. We're going to play a little bit of real or fake. And I'm going to give you a team. You're going to tell me if they're a real or fake playoff contender. So we are going to start with a team that is close to Corey's heart, and that's Indiana Pacers. Are they real or fake?
I'm going to let Corey start with this, and I'll piggyback off whatever he says, because he knows better than most.
It's real. I'm going to say it's real. And I'll make quick points about this. You know, the Eastern Conference is obviously the weaker conference. This Pacers team, they have the complete love and support of Indiana as a whole. This is probably the most the fan base has been behind an Indiana team probably since the 2014-2015 Pacers that lost to the Heat. This team has bonded together. They're very close. You know, you can just see that on the way they react to each other. There's a couple times where Sabonis has got like the late runs in the fourth quarter over top Miles Turner, and Miles Turner is like on the bench clapping hard and like fist pumping when Sabonis makes good plays. This team is just playing completely unselfless. They play for each other. They play hard. They play hard for Nate McMillan, which is a big thing that didn't happen last year. Oladipo has been a stud. Sabonis has been a stud. Collison has been fantastic. Bogdanovich doesn't play any defense, but the guy's been scoring like crazy to start this year. Lance Stephenson's finally getting confident. Miles Turner is healthy. And even though he still pump fakes himself out of jump shots, he looks better. I'm on board. I think they can definitely be a low-seeded playoff team.
Yeah, the only thing that worries me, Corey, is the fact that the Heat and the Bucks right now are at 9-10 in the playoff standings. And that, for me, those are two teams that are legit. Probably the Bucks more so than the Heat. But I agree. I think the Pacers sneak in for an eighth seed because the Heat right now are still trying to find their groove. They've had a couple of good wins, but the Pacers have been a bit steadier earlier on in the season. It's just whether they can maintain that consistency, whether Oladipo continue his all-star form, whether you know Miles Turner can pick it up and become the stud that we know he is. They've got some good depth, as Corey mentioned. He rattled off a heap of names there. So I'm going to back him in as well, Corey. I'm going to back your boys in.
Yeah, I think they're a real playoff contender. I'm not locking them in the playoffs, but I think they'll definitely be competing for a playoff seed. They have a lot of pretty good players. You know, it's not like they have any like true studs that's like, oh, this guy's, you know, dominating. Victor Oladipo's playing well. But across the board, there's a couple guys, you know, that are all playing good. So I think that helps. I also like the energy they play with. I think that's something that's really sticks out for them in the pace and just a lot of movement. So hopefully for Corey's sake, they sneak into the playoffs. All right, another team, real or fake, playoff contender, New York Knicks.
This is getting a bit fake for me, Nick. I'm not the fact that I'm a Nets fan and the New York hate is real. It's just that Porzingis and Kanter missed last night. We saw that they've blown some absolutely huge leads against the Cavs and the Rockets now. Porzingis missing games doesn't bode well for the rest of the season. We mentioned the fact that, you know, in previous outlet pods, can he play 70, 75 games this season? Hopefully he can, but they rely so heavily on him that without him, who do they go to? Michael Beasley, despite the fact that he was good last night. You don't want to be turning to Michael Beasley in the twilight of his career. I think that they come out and the Bucks probably take their spot quite easily. Even the Heat. Those are two teams who I see have more talent. And I could probably even chuck in the Hornets there as well with Kemba Walker and Dwight Howard when he's not making obscene gestures. They're playing at least some okay basketball.
Yeah, I'm saying this is fake. Knicks fans, Knickerboxers, polls. This is not the time for you guys to pop your head out. I think you guys are any more than a 10 to 12 seed in the East. You've had a very nice run to start. Tim Hardaway Jr. is earning some of that $71 million contract.
Yeah, I think the Knicks, they'll probably hang around in the playoff race. I feel more confident probably with the Pacers, like you mentioned, Jack. The Porzingis injuries are a little bit alarming. It's just going to be Knicks and small injuries all season long. So I think for the Knicks would be their road record, 9-3 at home, 1-6 on the road. So when they have to go play on the road, they're not very good. And I think that's something that you look for in a playoff team. But moving on to another real or fake, the Utah Jazz.
This one's hard for me, Nick, because I'm envisioning a team that has Rudy Gobert and they're real. I see a team that doesn't have Rudy Gobert and it's fake. So it's almost like I need my Buzik Manuel scale here from JBT Pod to sort of, you know, somewhere along the scale, I'm in the middle. Donovan Mitchell has been absolutely outstanding. He's been, this rookie class has been insane. And any other year, Donovan Mitchell would be the rookie of the year. He stepped up. Rookie Rubio needs to get back some form. Rodney Hood's starting to show some glimpses. So there's some signs there. It's just whether that they can, their defense can hold long enough. And in that time, they can score enough to get some wins on the board before they get their French stud back. I'm going to back them in for a real just because there are some teams around there. And when it comes to it, they are that good defensively. There are other teams that are, you know, are wishy-washy and in the middle in terms of offense and defense. Whereas Utah have always been elite in that category. So I'm going to go real, but then probably next week I'll be changing my mind. So, you know me, I'm always on the fence.
I'm saying fake. Donovan Mitchell has been fantastic. FanDuel pick. If anyone plays FanDuel, Donovan Mitchell is a nice little great value stud. Rudy Gobert being hurt is my biggest concern. Ricky Rubio has been rather mediocre, especially with the Gobert going down. He's not getting those easy assists. Inglis is solid, but there's just, you know, Johnson's missed time too, I think, in Utah. The defense is great. I just don't think it'll be enough to secure a playoff spot.
Yeah, I'm going with fake as well. I think the inconsistent offense is what's going to hurt the Jazz. Even when Gobert comes back, I think they just have some problems offensively. All right, our next team, real or fake, the Orlando Magic. They've definitely had some issues of late, and they started hot, and things are not looking good.
Yeah, they are about as hot as my takes, Nicholas. They are lukewarm at best. In fact, they're probably freezing at this stage after losing their eighth straight game against the 76ers last night. That hot season start we were all raving about. Now, it's not to say that they're not playing like okay basketball. Like, you know, Aaron Gordon, for me, still looks pretty good. It's just that the fact that their streak is over. Like, you have your moments in the season, and I don't think that they're going to be any higher than a 12th seed. You know, they're going to be a lottery team. And I think that that bodes well for them, you know, trying, because they're still trying to find a franchise player to build around. Aaron Gordon might be that. Jonathan Isaac might be that. I really like him. I like those two, and hopefully they can keep those two for an extended period. But they still don't have an absolute stud. Like, you look at Mitchell, Lonzo, Tatum, Simmons, all these guys, even Markkanen in Chicago. Those are guys you can build a franchise around. But right now, Aaron Gordon might be that guy, but it's also a contract year for him. So guys always ball out in their contract years because they want to get paid. So there's a lot of questions around this Magic team. And, you know, as much as it was fun early on, the Magic has been lost.
Yeah, Orlando back to being Orlando. I was waiting for this to happen because they were playing, I mean, kind of like to the degree, they're to a degree, they were playing like the Pacers were, well above their ceiling. Luckily for me, the Pacers haven't came back down to earth yet, but Orlando kind of had that, you know, scorch meteor back to the ground. Evan Fournier has been struggling. I don't think he scored over 20 points in like three of the last four games or four of the last five games, something like that. Okay, Vucevic isn't balling like a crazy man like he was to start off the year.
Yeah.
They've had issues at the point guard position. I think it's fake. I think their playoff hopes went out the window about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I think they're shooting to start the season. They had a couple guys shooting well over 40% from three, and they just all cooled down. You know, it kind of sucks because it looked like, you know, Frank Vogel finally got them to click, but it's kind of strange. Alfred Payton comes back, and then they start playing pretty bad. I'm just throwing that out
there.
Yeah. But
that's point guard can't shoot.
Yeah, that's my thing. You know that, Corey.
Real to the weekend.
Real or fake, the Los Angeles Lakers?
Look, Nick, if we were to have guests on this podcast that were Laker fans, if anyone says real to this and like responds on Twitter, then I'm just going to block them because, like, seriously, there is no way that this team is like, somehow they're above their contenders and their rivals in the Clippers. Somehow they've gotten 8 wins on the board. They're a good coaching. Luke Walton and Lonzo Ball hasn't been as bad as we all thought. Like, you know, he has his moments, he has his up and his down games. They've got Brook Lopez, who is a very good player. They've got KCP, who is a very good defender. They've got pieces there. And Kyle Kuzma has been a revelation. We all know that. But there is no way that they are going to be making... And even Brandon Ingram has improved his form, but there are question marks around him, I still think. But there is no way they're making the playoffs this year. If they do, I will fly to America and I will strip out the front of Staples Center.
Wow. That's interesting.
That confident. I'm finally doing a hot take for you, Corey.
I like it. I respect
put it all in the line.
Literally.
I'm going to roll with you because I agree that this is fake. Unfortunately, Laker fans listening, you just aren't that good yet. The offense is fun to watch at times. Lonzo Ball does some things very well, other things very poorly. I definitely think they're in a step towards the right direction, but they are not in that. They're not there yet. They're just not there.
Yeah, I would say, though, they've played better than I expected so far this season.
Yeah.
I think the energy has been high. The defense has been a lot better, but I think fake as a playoff contender, you know, like you guys said, they're just not quite there yet. You know, but there is some promising signs. And hey, who knows? If Lonzo is actually shooting 40% from the field and 30% from three, they might be even in better shape than they are now. But Jack mentioned it. The other LA team, the Clippers. Real or fake playoff contender? Are the Clippers just going to suck all year long, or are they going to get back in the race?
Now, this is where it gets tricky, Nick, because the Clippers, when we did the preview pod, we hark back to it. It's all about the health. Teodosic, I saw on Twitter today that he's apparently going to be back in a week or two. That will help tremendously. That will help their depth and allow guys to go to the bench that should be starting. But they're still missing Beverly for the season, which is a huge out. Your starting point guard, your defensive stalwart, Danilo Gallinari has barely played 65 games in a season across his entire career. Blake Griffin has been playing well of late, but he's been patchy. DeAndre is in trade rumors, so it's going to be interesting to see whether they put him on the trading block, whether they're outside of the that playoff race, and you know this is fake. I'm going to give this a fake just because that they are so far behind the eight ball right now at 7-11, at 12th, and the fact that the Thunder are also in that same predicament, but they're a game ahead of them, and even the Pelicans right now, those guys that they're contending with for an eighth spot are playing better basketball than them. So I'm going with fake for this just because those around them are playing much better. Their circumstances are better. And the circumstances at Staples for the Clippers are pretty dire.
Yeah, I'm saying fake. I think when Patrick Beverley went down for the year, it's when I officially was like, this team's going to struggle. They're going to have to rely too much on Austin Rivers and Lou Williams. DeAndre Jordan, I do think, will get traded before the season is over, especially if the struggles continue. They're just not, you know, and Gallinari's been in and out with injuries. Like you mentioned, Jack, what we talked about on the preview pod with injuries has been the issue for the Clippers so far. And Blake Griffin hasn't gotten hurt yet. You know, knock on wood, I hope he doesn't get hurt. But as history and time tells us, there is a Blake Griffin injury on the horizon.
Oh, sorry. Gallinari's contract as well. Like, I was one that was I liked the move initially, but you know, now looking at a 3 years, $65 million for a guy that can barely play 70 games a year, and is when he's on there, he doesn't have the most cohesive fit within the system, and he hasn't been producing. I think we're going to be looking back on that as one that is certainly a miss by the Clippers front office, and there might be some big changes there. Steve Ballmer's got the money; he's probably doesn't have the patience either. So there's going to be some big moves, that's for sure. I reckon.
Yeah, that's very true. They did spend a ton of money, and I think Corey and I, from the start, did not like the Gallinari move. So,
No, I was not a fan.
Yeah, I remember mentioning it on the preview pod, and I actually remember mentioning it all the way in the free agent, you know, signing talk. So I think Gallinari, just like Jack mentioned, the injury is just a concern. And the Clippers losing Beverly, that energy definitely hurts. And like Corey, you said on the last pod, we talked kind of about DeAndre Jordan possibly getting moved to Cleveland or someone like that. I mean, it could be a really interesting year for the Clippers. It's funny because they had the opportunity to start with a clean slate this summer, but instead they tried to kind of retool.
Yeah.
And they might end up doing the same thing midseason, except they're going to be stuck with a whole bunch of bad contracts.
Long term, it would have made sense, Nick, but I think in an LA market, you want to maintain relevancy. So I can see where they're coming from. But they're not a low market team like in Atlanta where they can just bottom out. And, like, you know, no one's really going to care anyway. They can try and get a franchise stud in an upcoming draft, whether it's a Bagley or a Doncic or whoever. But I think it would have made more sense to do that. But I don't think, as I mentioned, Steve Ballmer has the patience to do so. And, you know, they're looking to also move out of Staples. And I think if you don't have a solid foundation there, you'd rather be around that 8 to 10 range, 6 to 10 range on a good day. Then be, you know, meddling down the bottom, because then you're not going to have anyone show up to the games and sell tickets or sell merch.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely think this is going to be a trying time for the Clippers. Steve is going to have a lot of tough decisions ahead. I think even, you know, Doc Rivers, his future is on the line right now. Do you want to keep going forward with Doc, or do you want to get a change of, you know, face of your franchise as well?
Yeah, personally, I know, Jack, like you said, that, you know, being in L.A. hurts, but I think sometimes you just have to make the right decision and, you know, clean house. Like, the Knicks and the Nets have both done it, and they both play in New York, and they're doing okay. Obviously, the Knicks have, you know, that franchise history that helps them, but enough negative talk. That wraps it up for today. Jack, Corey, thank you for hopping on. As always, thank you, everybody, for listening, and you can listen to us on iTunes, OTGBasketball.com, and Blog Talk Radio.
Hasta la vista, baby.